There are lots of compelling stories in the New and Old Testament. Some are designed to comfort the afflicted, and some seem to be designed to afflict the comfortable. This is one of those. And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the multitude putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came and put in 2 copper coins, which make a penny. And he called his disciples to him and said to them, "Truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury, for they all contributed out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty has put in everything she had, her whole living." And I think part of Jesus' point was to call up short, in some respects, the religious elite, those who had it all figured out. And then by extension to some of the rest of us, and seems to be saying, well, at least you could do that well. But in this story and in most others, there's also, I think, kind of a backside to it that takes a little bit of the edge off and opens up even more questions. It seems to me that among many other things that are going on in Jesus' use of the poor widow and her small offering, sort of as an object lesson, is this more ultimate reality. That is that small things matter. Small things matter. Maybe more than you think. We were flying back from Atlanta this last week, and we were on Southwest, so there was open seating, and I picked a seat that was as close to the front as I could get, but on the window, because that's where I like to sit, and it turns out I was right next to the engine. So I'm like this far from this massive internal combustion machine that's mounted to essentially the fuel tank, which is sort of sobering in a way. Aircraft design is complicated. And I think extraordinarily precise. And I noticed on the engine was, and I hadn't noticed this before, there's a little flange on the side of the engine on the cabin side. It's about this long and about this wide. It's got the surface area of your hand, essentially. And it's mounted on the side there, and I'm going, I wonder what that's for. I bet that's not accidental. And there's nothing about aerospace design that is imprecise and not functional. So I'm going, I wonder what that is. Well, it turns out, a very short conversation with Siri can tell you exactly what it is. It's called a strake, as in strike only with an A, a strake. And it's got a very interesting purpose. It generates more lift at lower speeds because of how it's angled and air hits it and then hits the leading edge of the wing, apparently. So it generates more lift at lower speeds. It means the plane can land at slower speeds, and it takes longer for the plane to stall and get into trouble. Interesting. Well, I also learned, because I decided I'd waste a little more time surfing the internet on aerospace design, that there are only 2 airplanes in the entire fleet of airplanes that use that strake in that way on the cabin side of the engine. One is the Boeing 737, which I was on, and it's sort of the workhorse of aviation. The other is the Airbus 320, which looks just like a 737, only it's bigger. Well, the Airbus 320 was the plane that Sully landed in the Hudson River. And I'm going, huh, generates more lift at lower speeds, can land at lower speeds, takes longer to stall. Small things matter. Was it the strakes and Sully's skill that saved their lives? Well, I don't think it was incidental. Small things matter. How do small things matter? Well, I think small things matter, first of all, they matter symbolically, that we attach to ourselves symbols of things that attach us to larger groups. Take a look at guys, or anybody, your lapel pins, if you wear them. What is it that signifies? An American flag? Often it's not. Around Texas Tech, all the administrators, I think, are required by contract to wear double T's right there. And other things. You know, the symbols we put on our clothing, or that we adorn ourselves with jewelry and so on, take our individual identities, which are just our names, and attach them and connect them to a larger identity, American, Red Raider Nation. Often as not, we have religious symbols, crosses and other things that identify us with our faith. So our individual identities connect us to a larger identity, and small things, symbolically, matter. Well, these small things that enhance our collective identity matter in a second way. They matter emotionally. Small things that are symbols also matter emotionally. Little red sea on a nice blue cap. And weren't we all just a little bit touched by the idea that of all teams, the Cubs finally won the World Series? And we all became Cub fans for at least a little bit of time. And that's all right with us lifelong Cub fans. We're happy to have you. Because this became for us not just a moment to celebrate the good work of a good team this year, but we were connected emotionally to people we have loved for a very long time. My grandmother was 3 years old in 1908. I'm sure she has no memory of the Cubs winning the World Series in that year, but she was a lifelong Cub fan. She attended the 1935 and 45 World Series. She took me to my first Cub game in 1962. I took her to her last Cub game in 1989, and she died a couple years later. And I felt connected to her in that way through this. Jeannie's mom, as a little girl growing up in Evanston, a suburb of Chicago, remembers being taken to Cub games by her mother on Ladies' Day. I guess they had Ladies' Days back in those days, you know. And the song that's now played at the end of every Cub victory, now more this year than in other years, Go Cubs Go, has become kind of an anthem. And it's used at family celebrations and commemorations as the whole family gets together around someone, but in the company of each other, you know, to remind ourselves that we are connected emotionally through small things, just a little red sea and a special color blue that they turned the Chicago River into this week. So we're all a little bit connected emotionally, but that's just a dynamic that's familiar to everyone at the same time, but we all know how this works. You know, there's a values clarification exercise that we sometimes do with youth and young college kids and so on. What would you go back into a burning house to get? In other words, what do you most value? And of course, the correct answer is nothing. If the house is on fire, leave it alone. Don't go back in. The one thing, however, that I own that if it was in a burning house, I would most want to get, even if I couldn't, was something that is never away from me anyway. It's this wedding ring. And even though it's just two pieces of metal that are fused together that could be relatively easily replaced, it's not the same as the one that she put right there on that particular day and at that particular moment. And that's how small things, even material things that could be replaced, are irreplaceable because they connect us emotionally. Symbolically to a collective identity, emotionally to specific people. And in thinking about my grandma this week and Jeannie's folks and all the members of Cub Nation in our family, I understood it immediately when the guy from North Carolina drove all the way to Indianapolis to listen to the Cub game on his radio at his father's gravesite. I understand that completely because we are connected emotionally through small things. And finally, I think small things matter because they connect us spiritually. Not just with each other, but with this larger notion of God, higher power, more, I think, generally, ground of all being that unites us with what we can't fully possibly understand, but can only know in part. And I think part of one of the small things that connects us spiritually is actually a very large thing. It may be as large as anything we know, planet Earth, which from God's perspective is a fairly small thing. It's one of, we really don't know how many planets there might be. We know of a few of them. None of them seem inhabitable in the same way ours is. But when you see the Earth, and by the way, it's not at the center of God's creation. There was a big fight about that in the Middle Ages. Galileo used a couple of small things to basically get himself ostracized politically and religiously. He used some observation, a protractor, and a couple of geometry formulas to say, you know what? It's the sun that we revolve around, and the sun itself is a fairly smallish, lukewarm star in the context of something that is unknowable. I find that oddly refreshing and hopeful, that more or less the largest thing we can really get our heads around, and that is our planet, is a very small thing under the dominion of an ultimate power. And it puts all circumstance, not only my life circumstance, but circumstances in our country, into some perspective. You know, it could be that God's got this, no matter what happens this week or next. Could be. And that becomes even more apparent as you look at some of the even smaller things that reflect God's creation and the limited ability of human beings to understand them. Engineers can reproduce what a hummingbird does, but they don't fully understand it. Nobody can reproduce what a giraffe does. A giraffe is physiologically impossible, especially when it dips its head down. That the whole upper half of their body should explode from blood pressure, and it doesn't. And nobody knows why. I find that oddly refreshing. There are some things that we can only look at and say, wow, that even small thing is full of wonder. There's a species of spider that does what all mama spiders do. It feeds its young. But this particular species of spider, when food is scarce, will intentionally and by instinct release an enzyme in her own body that takes her own life and turns her body into food. Does that remind you of anything? The body of Christ given for you in communion? To glimpse heaven in such a tiny thing, a spider, a particular kind of spider, a small thing that connects us spiritually to the very ground of all being. Pretty awesome stuff. Well, I wonder from time to time where I fit in. How do I matter? How do I matter? How might I matter more? In this context, I would suggest that if small things matter and you wonder how you matter, make yourself smaller. Make yourself smaller. Back to airplanes. Northwest Airlines many years ago learned that they could save $500,000 a year if they took the limes that they use to put in cocktails and on salads and so on, if they took each lime and cut it into 16 pieces instead of 8, they could save $500,000 a year by making the lime portion smaller and metaphorically connecting 1/16 of a lime to the rest. Make yourself smaller and connect yourselves with more people. Which calls to mind a rather afflicting, the comfortable other message Jesus gives in the New Testament, where he says, in the context of when you go to a feast or when you go to church or when you go to a wedding, take the lowest seat and wait to be invited higher, because he who exalts himself will be humbled. He who humbles himself will be exalted. I don't know. It seems to me that if small things matter, we might seek smaller things, moments, opportunities, every chance we have to be a part of or connected to with our identity, our emotions, and our spirits, to the people with whom God has granted us this moment to share life, to share love. You matter. I matter. Because small things matter. Amen.